Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Busy roads, big trucks, bigger risks. Don't face it alone. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
And welcome into another Spits and Suds postgame. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. And unfortunately, not the night we wanted, as Carolina score 5 third period goals and come back from a 3-1 deficit in the third period to beat the Stars 6-4 in Raleigh. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting and listening to Spits and Suds as we wrap up November. Stars now 1-1 on this 3-game trip Wednesday night that concludes in Chicago. And we're so glad to be joined. I'm going to pump his tires for a second. It's well deserved by what I feel is one of the better Stars reporters in Dallas, starsthoughts.com. He also writes for D Magazine. It's the greatness of Robert Tiffin. How are you, my friend?
Doing good, Gavin. It's always fun to do these, even after a game like that. That was probably really painful for a lot of fans.
Yeah. Let's go behind the curtain because you know, you and David Castillo, we actually keep track. And I love how you came on. You said, I think I suffered my first loss of the season with you guys. So I just absolutely love how we're like wondering, like, who's the jinx? Has nothing to do with the power play or giving up shorthanded goal. It has to do with the guest on Spits and Suds.
Well, I figured I had to get David going a little bit by taking one for the team here. So I figured I'd take the L tonight. Sorry about that. But hopefully that means he's got a 5-0 shutout coming his way next time.
Well, usually as the host, I point this in the direction, but Robert, I want to open it up to you. Where would you like to start tonight? Because if you take a step back and you say to yourself, okay, this was a really, really, you know, tough loss, but there were so many nuances in this game. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, the lead. I just threw an article up right before we started here to read. But don't stop listening to this to go read it. Finish listening to this, then go read that.
Starsthoughts.com.
Yeah. But you have to talk about special teams in this one. I'm sure. You know, I haven't looked at all the tweets yet, but I'm sure all the responses to your tweet are yelling about Steve Spott or something.
Yeah.
Just because that's how it goes with stuff like this. But there's also, like you said, so much to talk about. I mean, the Duchesne line contributed another 2 5-on-5 goals. That's huge. That line's been incredible, continues to be incredible. We're at game 20 now. The Stars are, let's see, what are they, 13-7. They have no overtime lost points. They've only gone to overtime, I think, once in the shootout against San Jose, right? If I have that correct. So they're weirdly not, you know, they've got 12 regulation wins, which is really good in the league. But also it kind of feels weird because none of these losses have given them kind of that consolation point like tonight. When you felt like they were going to get one after Heiskanen scored that goal to make it 4-4 late. So I think we have to talk about special teams. So the power play. Everyone's going to be angry and say the power play stinks, and they gave up effectively 2 shorthanded goals. I know the second one was technically like a second after the penalty expired. Power play. Let's talk about the power play. Is the power play completely broken? Do we need to throw it in the garbage? What's going on?
Well, I will say this. I did like Pete DeBoer. After the game, he used the term self-inflicted. I think it was 3 times when asked about it, when asked about like Carolina coming back, and he said it was self-inflicted. So basically putting the onus on his team. I thought that was a careful, but also profound use of verbiage by the coach.
And
talked about essentially giving up 2 power play goals and also 2 shorthanded goals. I guess the question is if the coaches aren't going to change, if the players on the ice aren't going to change, my only question is if you are giving up this many shorthanded goals, and Robert, we're not even talking about the shorthanded chances that, you know, Ottinger or DeSmith have saved. I guess the question becomes, And I'm being real serious here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they put two defensemen out? And I know that kind of diminishes what the power play is, but at the same time, we have to be honest with ourselves. Teams are taking advantage of this. It has to be a scouting thing where teams are like, we're going to be hyper aggressive and we're going to send a man.
Okay, well, let's talk about the two. Again, yeah. We're going to count them both as shorthanded goals. So the first one, I think Duchesne's coming across the blue line, and he tries to kind of flip the puck deep, although it's not a complete straight dump, you know, where he's really firing it hard, and it gets knocked down by, I think it's Aho, because Aho takes it the other way, but it gets knocked down. You know, it's not a great pass. It's not a great play with the puck. It doesn't turn into a breakaway. It's kind of a one-on-one and sort of a two-on-one. Heiskanen's back there, so he's kind of going with Aho. Down the ice, and Logan Stankoven is busting to get back down to cover Seth Jarvis on the weak side. Aho, you can tell, is looking past because Heiskanen kind of has him covered, and Heiskanen chooses, okay, I'm going to stick with my man. It looks like Stankoven's going to get back and get Jarvis. And Stankoven at one point kind of stops skating and weaves to get on the inside of Jarvis and doesn't take another stride. And I'll give Stankoven credit. Initially, I was going to rip him a little bit. Not actually, but, you know, I was going to point to the fact, oh, he stopped skating and he never took another stride. That's why he didn't catch up. But actually, Stankoven knew what he was doing because he was still close enough to have his stick in the passing lane. But if you look at it, and there's a great shot in the broadcast, Stankoven's stick was there. In fact, it was reached out even further than Jarvis's stick as he's receiving the pass. It's just the saucer pass was so perfect. It goes over Stankoven's stick. So. Yeah. Stankoven skated hard. He got back. He just was at the end of his reach, right, with his stick. And because the pass was saucered so perfectly and Stankoven couldn't quite get back all the way, he didn't have enough kind of play at the end of his stick to lift it up off the ice and knock it down. And also, you're moving pretty fast. But that's one where what's the big mistake? Probably that Duchesne play. But again, that's not like a bad play at the blue line that often turns into a straight breakaway. It's a play inside the neutral zone, and they still had a guy back. So having two defensemen back, the second defenseman would have still been where Stankoven is anyway, and he's probably not going to be as fast as Stankoven unless it's Heiskanen or maybe Harley anyway. So I don't think two defensemen help on that goal. The second goal, I think, and I wrote this tonight too, that's the one I think DeBoer is really thinking of when he's saying self-inflicted. That's the one
that was a momentum killer.
Any coach crazy, because what happens? Yeah. It's a clearance from deep in the Carolina zone right at the end of the power play. It goes far side, along the boards. It's shot pretty hard. Ottinger goes back and Harley skates back. Every other Stars player goes over to the bench. So what you think is going to happen, and most of the time it happens on a clearance that far down the ice, and we didn't really get a good shot of what happened with Ottinger along the boards. Usually the goalie's going to stop the puck, and between him and Harley, they'll be fine. Even if they send two guys, you know, at the very least, one of them can just fire the puck up the ice. Instead, the worst case scenario happens. The puck gets past Ottinger, but there's not even a weird bounce. It gets past Ottinger, so it cleanly goes to the weak side, and suddenly Harley realizes both Carolina penalty killing forwards, Jarvis and Aho, the same ones as the first shorthanded goal, they've both been coming down the ice, and Harley was in the right spot, but everyone else had changed. So that's one where I think if you're the coaches, you say those other four players took it for granted that this was going to work, that the puck was going to get knocked down by Ottinger behind the net, and instead it gets past him in the worst possible spot. So what do you want to have? You want to have one of those guys go down and just make sure, right? Instead of going to the bench, you want to have one of those other four forwards go. But, you know, the risk there, right, that the players are calculating is, well, I'm at the end of, you know, power play shift, so I'm a little tired. So if I go all the way back in my zone and get it, I don't want to be, you know, hemmed in my zone trying to make a play, and then I'm tired. So I'll just go, you know, again, they're taking it for granted. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a bad break, but that's the one I think that of the two, that's the one that in a way is worse because it's four guys not making enough of an effort, whereas on the first one, it's just, Duchesne didn't quite get it where he wanted to, but they still had guys back, and Carolina just made a great play.
You know, on Sunday's edition of Spits and Suds, I did throw out, when I previewed Carolina, I did throw out Sebastian Aho with 17 career shorthanded goals. Mm-hmm. And that kind of scared me. And I said, watch out, because I think teams are looking at that. And unfortunately, that did happen. On the final power play, where Martin Natchez, who is quickly becoming one of the NHL's best, boy, is he blossoming right in front of us, only 25 years old. One of the Carolina top picks from a few years back. But you know, whether or not he tried to put it off of Lyubushkin's skate, when people look at that highlight, I want to watch the angle of Lyubushkin's skate and how it turns almost parallel. And it could be an unlucky bounce, but I was searching before we went on to see what Natchez's thought was doing that. Was he trying to put it across or was he looking for a deflection? But point being is, my opinion is Lyubushkin has to come out a little bit more. I felt as though they're, you know, in big moments, you know, you got to kill those penalties. And I just felt as though Carolina, sure, I believe they're seventh in power play efficiency. But at the same time, Robert, they were so compact. You cannot give a player like Natchez that much time to look. I feel as though while you can sit there, you know, there has to be Lyubushkin probably, I think, has to come out about two or more, three steps.
Yeah. And yeah, that's right. That's what penalty kill is supposed to do, right? Your box right. isn't very useful if it gets collapsed so much that, you know, you're basically only protecting against the very, very most dangerous shots and it's too collapsed. But the thing you have to give Carolina for credit for in that is they had spent, you know, about 70 seconds straight with the same four Dallas penalty killers in the zone, kind of ragging them around. And the penalty killers should be doing a good job. They'd be making the right plays. And stay in good spots. I think it was Beck and Steele, I want to say, were the two forwards up there. And then probably Lyubushkin and Lindell, I'm saying without looking, were the two defensemen back there. And the problem is, when you get that tired, at a certain point, you kind of tend to sit in your lane and you hope that the other three guys there, someone else can kind of cover for you. But when all four of them get pretty tired, as they did on that shift, because it was a very active kill, right? They weren't just absorbing a ton of shots. They were chasing pucks on the wall. They were trying to, you know, outnumber at the point, that those sorts of things, at least early. They've been skating a lot and it's the end of the game, right? So they were tired. Yeah. So it's hard to push back out at that point when you're tired. You'd still like to see it, of course. That's no excuse. A player's never going to say, well, come on, I was tired. These are NHL players who are, you know, their cardiovascular capacity is beyond anything any of us will ever experience, most likely, right, unless you're a marathon runner. So yeah, he absolutely, you needed someone to push out there. You needed the PK box to be bigger. But also Carolina had done the hard work to wear down the penalty killers and to keep control of the puck to where they were able to collapse them. So they deserve some credit on that too.
And the hockey gods work in weird ways. Carolina the other day loses to Columbus. Columbus comes back to beat Carolina. They lose another goalie. So basically call up Spencer Martin, who's been up and down this year, you know, played pretty well considering. Mm-hmm. But also want to give credit to Rob Brind'Amour. I mean, I think too many times we look at the Stars deficiencies, and I know Pete DeBoer said self-inflicted, but I felt as though Carolina in that third period, the aggressiveness, the hard hitting, I felt as though they worked the Stars in the corners hard. They were much more physical. You know, we saw Wyatt Johnston get pushed down, you know, a couple of other, you know, big checks by Carolina. I just felt as though after losing in Columbus and two periods where I felt as though Stars kind of controlled the play minus their mistakes, I felt as though maybe something happened in the room because they came out and they did not look happy. And they, you know, they were completely a different team basically in the third period.
Yeah. And that's why that early goal was so huge, because you'll see that sometimes a team comes out in the third period and they have a little bit of a push, especially if the other team's kind of been scoring. But they got a push and they got a goal from it and they built on it, right? That Brent Burns goal right after that, it felt like just a natural continuation from the Aho goal, because all the momentum was there. The crowd was cheering. And even before Burns scored, the Hurricanes had a couple of other chances that could have gone in. I think it was around then that Ottinger had that great glove save on, I can't remember if it was Natchez or someone else right in the doorstep, where Ottinger had to just cleanly glove it, and it was a great save. But it kind of felt like, oh boy, they're going to have to really figure something out. Yeah. And I will give Dallas a little bit of credit, because yes, Carolina absolutely came out the room firing, and they tied it up, you know, within like 3 minutes. It was 3-3, and the Stars were kind of stunned. They did have a push after that Burns goal, I believe it was, when the Stars top line actually spent Wyatt Johnston, had a couple really good retrievals to actually kind of show, no, we're not totally giving up in this game. And they had one good shift to kind of push back before that Gostisbehere goal put Carolina up 4-3. But you need more than that, and you need it earlier too. This is a situation where you were always going to have that push, whatever the lead is, when the home team is down, especially a team as good as Carolina. When they're down going into third period, there should be a push. Any well-coached team, and especially a team as well-coached as Carolina, they're going to have a push at that point. And that's why Dallas should have had a bigger margin for error. They had so many chances in the first four, in the first 40 minutes. They had two other posts right after the Sagan goal. They had the Marchment chance in the power play. I mean, again, speaking of the power play, it wasn't only the shorthand goals. It's the fact that they went 0-for-3 as well. The Dallas power play just had to do something. And instead, they went 0-for-3 and gave up two shorties. They were like negative 2-for-3, I guess, if you really want to get specific. And you just can't do that. You have to have someone else step up. And, you know, again, Sagan had a breakaway. Roope Hintz had a breakaway in the third period, too, that he could have scored. Dodonov had a chance on the doorstep. I mean, they had their chances, and Marchment had that chance in the crease where I think Orlov got back and disrupted his stick a little bit. But you really, I mean, self-inflicted is the right phrase, I think, used, because when you have those chances, it's not just about the ones you allow, but it's just as much about the ones you don't convert. You know, a negative one or a positive one is still a movement of one in the wrong direction, whichever one it
means. It does have to be on the players as well. You're right, because they're obviously on the ice, but at some point, I don't know, I'm sure Steve Spott and Pete DeBoer are sick of hearing about it. And you mentioned, and I think you're right, there's only so much you can do, but I feel at this point they do have to throw some stuff against the wall. I don't know what that is. That's the coach's job, I guess, to figure out. But I know, you know, fan base wise, it's certainly a massive point of contention because, you know, we all know they have the makings to be a major contender, but to do so, they certainly have to fix this. Also, you know, wanted to, because we only see Carolina two times a year. He lives in Texas now, so I did want to give a shout-out to Brett Burns. Boy, came in the league in 2003, and you would never know it by watching him tonight. So, you know, I like to pick certain players of opposing teams and just give them shout-outs, and I'm just amazed. And quite honestly, a few years ago, he was a big Stars target. A lot of fans wanted him.
He was. That was the, let's see, it was 2022, I think, when they got Burns, and the Stars were rumored at least to be in on him at the time, and they ended up getting what would that have been? That would have been the first Pete DeBoer year. So I'm blanking on who they had instead, because I think they'd had Suter for a year already, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, I believe you're right.
But anyway, they were rumored to get him. But, you know, a lot of people were saying, this could be another situation where you get kind of an older defenseman and maybe he slows down. No, you got to give him full credit. This was his first goal of the year, but still he looks, you know, especially in Carolina's system, which is pretty dynamic. He looks good. He's a great player, and he's, you know, a little bit, he's got that kind of good crazy that you want a big defenseman to have, where he handles snakes and all that stuff on his ranch, I guess. I mean, he's just one of those, you have no idea what's happening. You know, it kind of makes you wish that he and Thornton and Pavelski had actually found a way to get a cup back in San Jose, because those are three very distinctive, but also they're characters, I guess. I'll put it that way. They're three characters. Doubt. You would have loved to hear all the stories about them winning a cup back in the day, but
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a great piece on him. And one of the things, he has this massive piece of land. I don't know where it is in Texas, but basically he has veterinarians like that. But he doesn't hunt. He actually just has all this exotic wildlife on the property to take pictures. It really is fascinating. And just, you know, seeing his life and how he lives away from hockey. Mm-hmm. It's just, he's a fascinating character. You're right.
He is. You know, he's got that smile, that hockey smile with missing all those teeth.
Yeah.
You can't help but kind of be, you're interested in him the minute you see him.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, probably more recognized in Minnesota than his days in San Jose and Carolina. I mean, just has not played for a marquee team to kind of get that notoriety that I think he deserves. He's 39 going on 40 this year, probably next year. He'll surpass 1,500 games in the NHL. So it is quite impressive.
He was also part of that fad. I have to point out, he was part of that fad too, with a couple of other players back in the day, including Brendan Smith, even, who have played both forward and defense.
Yes.
Including Dustin Byfuglien back in Winnipeg and Atlanta before that. So there's some little tradition of a few of these guys who are still around, of these big defense, physical defensemen who also at some point were played at power forward, which is something, you know, I think it's getting increasingly rare to see players who can actually be both forward and defense. I don't know that you really see that much anymore these days, but it's there's a lot of interesting stuff about a player like Brandon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. So Robert has some great insight. So let me ask you, cause you're tied in really, you know, close with the team. Any updates as far as Nils Lundqvist, and since they're going to be in Chicago, could we see Colin Blackwell inserted into the lineup? Because I'm going to be honest with you. I think Oscar Beck's been playing really, really well, but I just feel as though, you know, Blackwell, and granted it was based on injury, but I feel as though he deserves to be back in the lineup.
Yeah. I asked Pete DeBoer that exact question the other day before they left for the road trip after practice. And he said a couple of things. My question was basically, do you see Blackwell getting in a game on the road trip? And he said, well, you know, we usually like to try to keep guys involved, basically setting up the fact that he's going to go back on what he had said before, you know, earlier in the year about that. Not go back on it completely, but
yeah.
He was saying, I recognize that by me not saying, yes, he's going to get in a game, I am kind of going back on what we said before about trying to keep guys involved. But he went on then to praise explicitly Oscar Beck and saying, Beck has made it really hard for us to take him out of the lineup. He's been really good. And the fourth line as a whole, he praised the fourth line as a whole for playing really well. And for Pete DeBoer, that means not just, you know, driving energy and throwing some hits and stuff like that. They do that, absolutely. But also contributing offensively and generating chances. And you saw that tonight too. They had a couple of good shifts. Steele had a great chance, I believe. And he also set up Dodonov for a chance in alone on the doorstep after Steele pushed past a player along the boards. Steele just made a really hard, tough physical play to get by. Sometimes a physical play means withstanding stuff instead of dishing it out. And he pushed past the guy along the boards with the puck and then was able to set up Dodonov for what could have been a really, really nice goal for the fourth line. So all that to say, DeBoer said, we know Blackwell will get in at some point with our schedule. So he's going to be in there. But my read of things right now, based on what DeBoer said and what they've been doing, is that they really like what the fourth line has. And also it's kind of a compliment to Colin Blackwell saying that this isn't a player, you know, Maverick Bork, for instance, and this isn't a dig at Maverick Bork, but Maverick Bork's the sort of player you absolutely wouldn't want to sit for four games in a row, right? A young player who, you know, had an injury at the start of the year, a groin injury, we found out. So, I mean, that's even worse for a hockey player, because then even your first step you have questions about, right? And sometimes that's the step that makes all the difference. So you wouldn't sit Maverick Bork for that just because you worry about that, what that would do to his confidence and his consistency and everything. Whereas with Blackwell, it really shows that the coaching staff trusts that he'll be really professional about it and that he'll be ready to come in, kind of that Joel Hanley attitude that he always got praised for. That's a testament to Blackwell. And I'll say every time I've seen, before they left on the road trip, at least, when I would see Colin Blackwell, even, you know, we'd see him, you know, around the rink on game days, either before or after the game or at practice, staying out late, or at morning skate, staying out late. Blackwell's been, at least, you know, from an outsider's perspective, he seemed just as happy, just as positive as he's been from day one. He's always been a really pleasant guy to talk to, which, you know, the media always loves when guys are pleasant to talk to. So it's a compliment to him too. But it's possible against maybe when they go back to Chicago,
that
you might see him there. So, but then again, DeBoer said he did not guarantee that he would get in on the road trip either. So whenever he gets in, I think they're confident he'll be ready, but he's also, in a way, I compared him today earlier on Twitter to Ty Dellandrea. Ty Dellandrea set for a long stretch last year. And, you know, at the time, some of us were kind of wondering, this is a little bit weird. Seems like this player's brought some energy, but DeBoer was fine with it. And I really think the coaching staff, when they find a fourth line that's doing what they want it to, they don't want to disrupt it just to get some other fourth liner in. That's just kind of a lower stakes part of the lineup in a lot of ways. So they'd rather say, you know what, keep it rolling for as long as possible. And eventually we'll have a back-to-back or someone will be dinged up and we'll have to bring the other guy in. But it's kind of a good problem to have. It's just unfortunate for Blackwell because, you know, players want to play. No matter how good their attitude is, they want to play. So I think he'll get in.
I hope when they rewatch this tape, the one thing about Beck, I think it was in the third period, you know, he was to the side of the net and he tried to pass it in front of, you know, tried to pass it in front. I would love for him to shoot the puck in that case.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, why not? You're going up against a guy in Spencer Martin that, you know, might let some in. Why not just see? So just minor details, because I think he has a good shot. And I mean, I'd like to see Beck shoot a little bit more. But at the same time, I completely understand why DeBoer wouldn't want to take him out. I was just thinking of like, okay, just, you know, certain sparks to throw in there. You know, I mean, you know, two out of three periods isn't bad on the road, you know, but I mean, we've seen them win games, Robert, where they've just played for one period. So yeah. It's just a, you know, it's an oddball thing. I don't think we can look too much into tonight's game. I really don't. I think we, yeah. The tendency will be there to overanalyze and say the Stars need to do this and get mad. Well, let's break it down. First of all, the Carolina Hurricanes are among the tops in the Metro Division. So they're there for a reason. Okay. And they have terrific players that a lot of people don't know about because they are in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we have to think about that. And if you told me that, you know, the Stars would lose this game, I'd say, okay, that kind of makes sense. So, but when you watch the game, you know, this kind of let it slip away and, you know, for unfortunate reasons with shorthanded goals and power play inefficiency. So for those reasons, I can understand Stars fans being a little bit upset. Are you ready to panic and freak out with some Twitter questions, Robert?
Two things really quickly, and they will be quick. The first thing is you mentioned, you had also asked about Nils Lundqvist. That's a really quick one. My colleague, Sam Nessler, who writes for DLLS, whatever, I can't remember the organization, if it's All City or All DLS, whatever it is. Sam Nessler, everyone who follows the Stars probably knows him. He's on the road right now, and he was at morning skate today, and Lundqvist was out there, and Lundqvist actually had a moment where he was working with Colin Blackwell late after most of the players had already been off the ice, and Lundqvist tried to turn or do something, and he got angry and hit his stick against the boards. And Sam's read of it, which in watching the video that he took, I think he might be right, his read of it is that that Lundqvist maybe was testing like a muscle or something and wasn't able to do what he wanted to do, or it was still too painful, or maybe felt like he had re-aggravated it. And so that's what annoyed him. So my read for Lundqvist is he's not healthy. So he won't get in until he's actually fully healthy. So he's still working on that. That's Sam's opinion, and I think I agree with it. The second thing I wanted to point out is Miro Haskinen's goal, that fourth goal. That is something the Stars power play should be looking at doing more of. It wasn't on the power play.
Right.
Haskinen showed, and again, it's after that great shot he had, I think it was against Tampa Bay, when he had that fantastic shot off the rush, I think it was, where he just sniped it top shelf, that he's got confidence right now. And he looked like we remembered seeing him in his rookie season when he was just constantly making moves and creating a better shot for himself rather than making the safe play and staying in position or skating, you know, wide and then dishing it back to a guy. Haskinen kind of put on the cape a little bit and said, I'm going to do this. And that's what you need from your best players in the power play, whether it's Haskinen or Robertson or Wyatt Johnson or Roope Hintz. That's what you need from your best players in the power play, what Haskinen did right there in that play. So if their power play is going to get going, you can talk about Steve's spot all day long, but they need their best players to step up and say, I'm the one who's going to solve this in a smart way, not in a foolish way where you're taking on three guys by yourself, but in a way where you're taking on a guy one-on-one and you know you can beat him because you've got the skills to do it. That's what they need to see more of. And actually, I think I've seen some flashes of that. So I'm a little bit optimistic that despite the sour taste in everyone's mouth tonight, I think it actually, I'm cautiously optimistic about the power play getting better in the near future, but we'll have to see. It's on the players. Okay, those are my two things.
Let's turn over the rocks. Because of the third period comeback, I kind of put this down on my notes, but it is important to point out that the Stars were one of the lowest point production from the point. Anaheim was last. Dallas was second to last, and Dallas has done a much better job as far as defensive point production. And we saw it tonight with Haskinen. We saw it tonight with Harley. Lyubushkin has also been more active. So they are being more active as far as the defensemen getting in on offensive plays. So did want to point that out. So that is a positive. And you're right. We are seeing kind of Miro come around after a real slow start. So I am really glad you mentioned that. All right. Sterling Strange says the Stars are consistently inconsistent and have been for years. The team reflects their captain inconsistent. Best move Neil can make in the offseason will be to cut bait with Jamie Benn, give captaincy to someone else, and don't re-sign. Cut bait, move on. I realize that's tough to do, but it has to happen. It's the business of winning the Stanley Cup. There's no room for being loyal to a fault. Be loyal to the season ticket holders and fans and the rest of the players that deserve better. Pavelski sure deserved more. Okay, that's a handful from Sterling. Now, let's point out that Jim Neal has said quite candidly that as long as he's here, Jamie Benn will be here. How does that contract look? You know, we'll see. But I'm not so sure, Robert, that the captain's the issue. I don't look at the Stars' issues and think the captain, because maybe it's fans looking at Jamie Benn as if he is 5 years younger, Jamie Benn. And I can understand that. I kind of look at Jamie Benn similar to Dustin Brown in his twilight years, where he actually had a late emergence after some down years. And Dustin Brown was very good as far as, power play efficiency and faceoffs, and, you know, he just became a good kind of all around player. And I kind of look at that like Sagan and Ben, where, are they living up to their contracts dollar for dollar? Probably not, but they do bring a lot to the table that is not shown on the score sheet.
Yeah, I actually was talking to Wyatt Johnson about this the other day after practice, because until Maverick Bork was moved back to center a few games ago on the third line, Wyatt Johnson spent the bulk of the early season with Ben and Stankoven down on the third line. And I was asking Johnson about the fact that the Ben Stankoven Johnson line had some of the best defensive metrics of any line in the league, which, again, you know, everyone wants Wyatt Johnson to score goals. Everyone wants Jamie Benn to score goals. And certainly Logan Stankoven, who's still racking up the points, just doesn't have quite as many goals as we would hope by this point. But I asked Johnston, do you guys, you know, understand where's the defense coming from? Is this something that you've had to learn and adapt to, or as a line, you figure this out while you're still getting the offense going or whatever? And he said, it's just kind of one of those things where you have to take care of those things and you trust the offense will come after that. And I give Jamie Benn a lot of credit, because a few years ago, especially in the late era of Ben Sagan and Radulov, when Rick Bowness was still trying to squeeze a little bit out of that, a little bit of juice out of that orange, their defensive metrics were absolutely awful. And so Jamie Benn was kind of characterized as this defensive liability a little bit, at least in the community of people who were looking at kind of the numbers underneath the hood. So for Benn to be able to play in a line that was actually defensively solid this year, is a testament to him doing a lot of the things right. So yeah, he may not be scoring these big goals, and tonight his line wasn't great. His line didn't generate a lot tonight, and Wyatt Johnson obviously had that whiff and the high sticking penalty at the end of the game. So no one's gonna, although Johnson's not as in the line tonight. But Ben's the captain of the team, and the organization is gonna make the Madonna mistake twice, right? That's what Jim Neal is saying. This guy. Yeah. He's been a part of the team. He's the longest captain in Dallas Stars history. He's going to be the captain. He'll be here as long as he wants to be, and we'll find a spot for him. And frankly, Jamie Benn is talented enough to where whatever line he's on, whatever role that is, unless the wheels completely fall off, I think that's going to be a good thing for a Dallas Stars fans in the long run, even if occasionally it means you want to yell at him because he didn't score a goal or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Barnard checks in. Oscar Beck looked really good. Really liking his heavy forecheck and puck work in the corner. No takeaways from this one, other than they blew their lead after two and came out flat in the third. Rest is needed, and they can't sit on leads. I think we all agree. Oscar Beck does look really good. He's a terrific story. This is a guy that really fought his way into the NHL. And, I was talking to Steven Meserve about this, Robert, and, you know, we were talking about Oscar Beck, and Steven was saying how hard he works and how good he was for Texas and how consistent he was. And he was just fighting for that opportunity. And he's one of those guys that gets into the big show and makes the most of it. So it really is a good story for the Stars.
Yeah, I want to plug a piece I did about back a couple weeks ago right here, because he absolutely is a really good story. And the two things I would say about him are, number one, the best way to view Beck is a Radek Foxa at a league minimum contract. That's basically what he is, right? That's the thing everyone was saying last year, right? Radek Foxa is great, but he's, you know, making $3 million or whatever, and that's a little tough for the Stars cap situation, even though they put themselves in that situation. And Foxa earned that contract, so good for him. But just view Beck as a Radek Foxa at league minimum contract. Right. I don't see how you could be upset about him as a player, regardless of whether he's playing or sitting or whatever. And really, as a team, you can't let whichever of your 12th or 13th forwards are playing on a given night, that shouldn't be deciding games for you most of the night, especially a team as good as the Stars. So I just have a hard time getting too worked up about whether he or Blackwell or Dodonov or whoever sits or comes back in or out. Beck's been great. He's been exactly as advertised. And that's fine. And if he ends up sitting, or if someone else comes up for a little while and plays instead of him or whatever, that's fine. It's a long season, but give him credit. He's worked hard for many years. He's been responsible, and he's earned Pete DeBoer's trust, which is something not every 12th or 13th forward has been able to do, including Radek Foxa last year. So give Beck credit. He's worked hard. It's really cool to see a player make the NHL. The second thing about Beck, though, aside from the contract, he wears braces, which is something a lot of people noticed when he scored his first goal and took a picture where he's got his braces on his teeth. And I asked him about that a couple of weeks ago and said, this is a little unusual. Most NHL players wait to do their dental work until after their career's over for obvious reasons. Right? Yeah. You don't want to get your braces bent. And the reason he has braces is because he took a nasty late hit last year in Cedar Park with the Texas Stars by a player in the Tucson Roadrunners, whose name I can't remember. But Beck said he shot the puck. And then, you know, what felt like a long time later, he got hit and it broke his jaw really badly. He missed the rest of the regular season. They had to put a plate in his jaw and basically screw together his mandible all back together again. So he finished the season. He came back for the playoffs, for game one of the playoffs, chipped in some points too, was a good player for them in the playoffs, despite not being able to chew anything because his jaw was so misaligned. Even after getting the jawbone put back together, his teeth were misaligned, so he couldn't chew food. So then in the offseason, he finally got braces to finish the job of helping realign his jaw so that he could actually chew solid food. So he said he's left him on for now, and he's just kind of crossing his fingers and hoping he doesn't get a puck up high or a high stick. But they're getting better. He can now chew food, but it's just been a bit of a journey getting to that point. So if you see those, don't think that he's someone who's doing it out of vanity. He's doing it because he's a really tough guy who got his jaw shattered, and he's just trying to get back to a state of relative normalcy. So Beck's a pretty tough guy.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, 100 Degree Hockey with Stephen Meserve tomorrow comes out with a feature on Jordy Benn and the work that he's doing with the Stars organization. So be sure to check that out. And as always, I'll continue to say starsthoughts.com. You could just go back on Robert's page, and there's great articles in there. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the good one on Oscar Beck. Okay. Michael Moore with a two-part question. Michael is a season ticket holder. He said, there is something just not clicking. This is a good team, not a great one. We have players that can't even enter a zone on a power play. I find myself wanting a zone face-off on every power play. I get they are winning, but feels like expectations were set too high on this team as of now. Part two, at what point in time do we stop making excuses for so-called top line? When do we say that Dumba was not a great add, and we make a call down to Austin? When do we fire our power play coach? I could go on and on, but stick tap to you guys from a frustrated season ticket holder. Robert, these questions are taking my breath away tonight. Literally, I'm trying to get through these two parts without taking a breath. So we do appreciate that. Let's dive into this one. Yeah. So talking with Joe O'Donnell, I'll just start, Robert, on our Wild preview and seeing Matt Dumba as much as he has seen Matt Dumba. He says, amazing guy in the community. The thing about Matt Dumba is there are going to be some nights that he absolutely drives you crazy, and there are other nights that he's going to make a big hit and you're absolutely going to love him. It's kind of very Ryan Suter-esque, where some nights, he drove you crazy. And I don't know. I mean, that could have been a really bad turnover, but Jake Oettinger saved him tonight.
Yeah, that one where it was flipped up high in the zone and Dumba reached up to glove it. And actually, it wasn't in the zone. It was in the neutral zone on the other side of the blue line. Initially, I thought it was in the zone.
Created a 2-on-0.
Yeah, and that's just a, you know, it's a tough decision, right? In the neutral zone, you don't really want to just bat the puck away and give it away in the neutral zone when you're one of the last men back there. I get it. But the decision to try to bring it down quickly went bad for him and turned into a, you know, and then it ended up being a charmed kind of sequence for the Stars because they scored at the other end.
Yeah, they did.
I think that was the Marchment goal where Duchesne had the great forecheck to turn the puck over, and then Sagan easily returned the favor to Marchment after the you know, the opposite happened in the first minute of the game. That man, that line. Yes, there's stuff that's wrong this season, and Matt Dumba has not been the partner for Miro Heiskanen that everyone has hoped. But I'll say this: the Duchesne Marchment Sagan line has been maybe the second best line. If you go to moneypuck.com/lines and just look at lines that have played like 150 minutes together or whatever, it's like the second line forward line in the NHL. And again, tonight's a night where it felt like it. They scored two goals. They probably could have scored five. And I'm hard pressed to be angry at them for not scoring more, given that they've been the Stars' best line almost every night. Two of their players are in their mid 30s. Marchman's 29. I mean, this isn't like a bunch of rookies that are just, oh, no one's seen us, no one has the book on us. Everyone should have the book on them. Sagan has been patched together multiple times in his career. Yeah. Duchesne, right? He's the oldest of the three. They're just incredible. So I don't think we should lose sight of all the good that's happening this year.
Right.
13-7 doesn't feel amazing, but it is pretty good in the NHL. It's good. That said, Dumba, the decision-making for him has been rough. That's kind of the reputation. So what are you going to do, right? The converse of that is Lyubushkin has been better than advertised. So
better than average.
That's given
as
the Stars.
Lundqvist.
And Lundqvist has been good too. So he's hurt right now. And the Stars also have Leon Bixel there. So for my money, Harley and Heiskanen, they're both starting to score. Harley scored tonight. Heiskanen's got a couple goals lately. So you finally get your two best offensive defensemen going. Lindell was fantastic in this game also. A couple of huge defensive plays.
Yes.
And he's also been playing up. I mean, the Stars have three defensemen now who look like they're starting to get going. I still think Thomas Harley hasn't had a great season so far by the standard he set for himself.
Yeah, I think defensively is where I worry about Harley right now. I think that's where he really I'm not worried about Thomas Harley offensively. I'm worried about him in the defensive zone. Yeah. And I'd love to see the improvement on that side of the puck. But personally, at this point, after watching all six, I personally would love to see I know it takes him off his strong side, but I want to see Lindell and Heiskanen together. I want to see Harley, and I'll pair him, let's say, with Lyubushkin. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go Brendan Smith and either Nils Lundqvist or Matt Dumba.
Yeah, that seems kind of like what the coaching staff has settled on too at this point. I Dumba occasionally has gotten kind of spells up with Heiskanen since coming back from the injury, but I think at this point, Pete DeBoer, as he has in years past, he doesn't want a righty up there just to be a righty, right? Nils Lundqvist got chances up there, and he finally decided, you know, it's just not the right player, right? And that doesn't mean the player doesn't still have a spot. That doesn't mean Dumba doesn't still have a spot in the team and can't still be useful, but he hasn't lived up to the contract, and it's been unfortunate. So we'll see what happens as the year goes on. I still think Leon Bixel is going to be in this squad by game 82 in some way or another.
Yeah.
If the Stars as a organization are really happy with his progress. I asked someone with the Stars a little over a week ago, I think maybe it was 2 weeks ago, about how they saw him. And they're like, he's not Bobby Orr, but he doesn't have to be. He's been really good in a lot of other ways.
Right.
And he's scoring goals too, or scoring points at least. He's got, I think, a goal or two this year also. So I think at the end of the day, Dumba, he's not going to be a top line defenseman, but they have other options there. And they have options in the bottom four that will work because Lyubushkin has been better than they advertised. So it's all going to work out okay. I don't think it's worth panicking over, but it is true that for however many years in a row, once again, the Stars are looking at needing defensive improvements. But the advantage this year is that they might have the biggest one already in-house with Leon Bixel.
Yeah, and I agree. I think we'll see him late in the year, but I don't want Stars fans to get mad if for some reason there's another injury. The call-up to me is Alexander Petrovic.
NHL especially if it's a righty that they need. Yeah. Especially if they need a righty.
Exactly. And you got to let Big Bish cook down in Texas. I know it seems like, you know, you want to bring him up. I get it and everything. Just let him continue eating minutes down there. He's still getting adjusted to the North American game, still getting used to travel, a lot of stuff. So he's coming up quick. But he'll be there. And when he's here, I think he's going to be a nice impact for this Stars team. Thank you so much, Michael. Chuck L. Agrees that he thinks that Natchez was aiming at Labushkin's skate. Sky Maverick 21. Unlucky night on all accounts, but was one of their first games besides Winnipeg where the Stars were outworked, and it showed. I'd say outworked in the third period, Sky. Got to perform against bigger teams. I mean, I think they did that against Tampa the other night. Existential pain continues. I used to give the benefit of the doubt to the power play. Didn't mind the outcome until they started seriously affecting games. So he's upset. You know, on the power play situation, which I think.
Yeah. Well, so is Pete DeBoer. So,
yeah, exactly.
Good company. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So for those, and you're absolutely right, Robert, I'll say it again, Pete DeBoer, not happy after this game, saying self-inflicted. So, I think whilst you're mad as a Stars fan and we're disappointed, both Robert and I at the same time, I think Pete DeBoer obviously realizes it's not like he's brushing it off. Leighton Wallace says, at the game tonight, where's Wyatt Johnston? Love the guy. Wish he was playing better. I thought actually Wyatt Johnston was pretty good in this game.
Yeah, he had that really big shift in the third period too.
Yeah.
I will say he's one of those players, right, where you need to get the power play going. That was the difference tonight. If the Stars get one power play goal, they get a point out of this game, at least if they don't win it outright in regulation because they have a bigger lead, right? So, yes, absolutely, Wyatt Johnston is a player the Stars need more from, as is Roope Hintz, and as is Jason Robertson. Those three need to sort out the fact that they are not up to the standards they've set for themselves, but the coaching staff has put the three of them together on that top line, and they've basically said, you figure it out, right? So yes, Wyatt Johnston also, let's remember, was hurt in camp also. So he, you know, like with Maverick Bork, right, just kind of starting to be healthy after coming back from a groin injury, who we don't know exactly what Wyatt Johnston had, but it's possible it's something that, while no one's going to make excuses or say anything like that, it's possible that, like Jason Robertson, there's something that is lingering. And frankly, I find it almost a little bit likely that something has bothered him a little bit, just because what we've seen from Wyatt Johnston through his first two seasons, it seems unlikely to me that he's suddenly forgotten how to be a dominant force in the power play. So we'll see what happens. But I tend to trust good players who have shown you that they're good players over multiple years, who aren't, you know, towards the end of an aging curve. Young, good players, I tend to think, yeah, they're going to keep being good. You just have to live with some bumps in the road as they grow each year.
All right, more power play frustration. David Kokas says, I think it's easy to blame the coaching spot, but I think it's the players and lack of detail and leadership in the third. Carolina ramped up. When Dallas tried to match that, they started taking penalties. Yeah, a couple of tough high sticks. I know Razor on the broadcast, Robert, said that he just brushed them, but a brush to the chin is still a you know what? They
well, especially when power plays are lopsided, right? They're looking for something. I mean, and they're also looking not to call stuff. Logan Stankoven got easily hooked. I think it was in the third period. I can't remember, but I think it was in the third period. He got easily hooked on an extended good shift, one of the good shifts for that line, and it wasn't called because the power plays were pretty lopsided, and they just didn't really want to, you know, they were looking to balance it out the other way. That's not fair. It's not right. It's not ethical. We can all yell about it, but that's the NHL. So welcome to the league. That's how it
works. I think the toughest thing for a referee, because it's subjective, to call is embellishment on a high stick, because clearly the replay will show the stick was up high, but how the player reacts certainly sells the high stick.
Yep.
So, you know, not trying to be Homer there, but that's just reality. When a stick touches the face, players now know, you know, react and act as though you just got punched in the face.
Yep.
All right. Let's continue. Steven says, closer than I expected. Still, hopefully it's another chance for them to look in the mirror. Remember how dangerous even a single moment of complacency can be in this league. You have to be prepared for every second against the current best team in hockey. I'll go a step further, Steven. In today's NHL, where parity seems to reign supreme, I don't think there are any nights off. We saw that against San Jose. We certainly saw that against Anaheim. Chicago has played the Stars tough. There's just no easy nights. You have to play your game.
Yeah, and that's the key for Dallas. And, you know, taking the long view, if the Stars maintain this ratio of winning roughly two of every three games they play, as a fan, that means that you've got a 1 in 3 chance of having a bad night, I guess, and being annoyed after the game. But as a hockey team, that works out to what, like a 55-27 record or something like that. And that's 110 points. I mean, that's a great, great record. So yes, you know, the Stars have had an easier schedule. There's reasons to not be totally happy with everything. Absolutely. And there's even reasons, especially after tonight, there are a lot of reasons to be very concerned about a couple of very specific things and players. But taking the longer view, it's okay. It's okay. They've made some mistakes. Again, if you'd said they were going to lose 6-4 to Carolina, like you said, Gavin, you would have accepted it. It's just the way it happened was particularly bitter because it was self-inflicted, like DeBoer said.
But if you told me
it's a long season.
Exactly, Robert. If you told me hey, this is going to be a 3-game road trip, the Stars are going to take 2 out of a possible 6 points, and they're going to play at Tampa, at Carolina, at Chicago, I'd probably say, okay, those 2 points were at Chicago. But now if you're telling me if they can beat Chicago on Wednesday, which I'm going to remind Stars fans will not be easy, if you tell me it's a 3-game trip, any 3-game trip, and I get 4 out of 6 points, I am in. So I think we have to kind of keep that in perspective. Yes, tonight is rough. Tonight is no bueno, so to speak. But, you know, it is what it is. That's going to happen. But then you're going to have what happened against Nashville last year where you have Yanni Hakanpää with seconds left scoring from the point in a crazy comeback victory over the Predators in a game you should have lost. So It happens, and that it happens in every sport. Yeah. It's just the way the season rolls. Man, you can't win every game.
That's so true. And remember last year, the Stars were the best team in the Western Conference. They won their division. They hung a banner up. And, you know, what did it get him? It didn't exactly get him a red carpet through the playoffs.
Right.
So, yeah, that won't necessarily be the case every year. Sometimes that means that you'll get a little bit of an easier opponent in the first round. But like you said, even the teams that probably aren't going to make the playoffs have still been pretty tough and will be pretty tough for most teams this year. So, you know, not that the Stars are ever going to admit it or consciously even decide to do it, but if it means they're going to try to get through the season without necessarily trying to keep a razor's edge of sharpness every single night, and if that's enough to get them, you know, maybe second or third in the division, and they go into the playoffs, if that's enough for them to just get to the playoffs, and if they're starting to peak at the right time, who's going to complain about that, right? Who wants a Central Division banner again this year? Everyone wants to see them actually hang a Campbell Bowl trophy this year, right, and make it to the Cup final. So if there's even some subconscious kind of pacing themselves going on right now, who could blame them after last year?
Absolutely. Jennifer Skog, an ineffective power play. Again, 3 power plays and nothing to show for it. Very frustrating. I will add this point. I think one of the frustrating aspects, Robert, as well, is when the power plays are happening and opportunities to, I don't want to say put the game away, but certainly change the main. I mean, the Stars with the early power plays against San Jose and not cashing in, and then San Jose scores the shorthanded goal. Same in Carolina, where they had the early power plays and Carolina scores. So it definitely flips the momentum, whether teams kill or if they score shorthanded goals. So I would love, if they're going to score, it would be nice to get a first period power play.
Yeah. And the Stars had those two early in the first period, and almost, I mean, it's sad because sometimes you'll hear, oh wow, well, this isn't the right time for it, right? At the start of the game, they haven't really settled in yet, so they're not in a rhythm. And then they had their third power play, which kind of bridged the second intermission, you know, a minute before and a minute after. So you can complain about that, but really the power play doesn't need to score every time. Stars would have been fine if they'd just gone 0-for-3 on the power play tonight and not given up any shorthanded goals. You can't hurt your team with a power play. You just need to do something positive on it. It doesn't always have to be goals. Some nights it does. Absolutely. You can't not score in the power play ever. But if you're getting the scoring the Stars were getting from elsewhere, I mean, they scored 4 goals on the road against Carolina. That's a great performance on the road. And that should get you at least a point in any game.
This
game was just almost a comedy of errors with the way they lost it. And that's a tough thing for fans to watch. And
you know, it's a crazy game when you're not even talking about Tyler Seguin scoring 18 seconds in.
Yeah. Man, that goal was fun too. That was I mean, come on, this game had a lot to be really happy about, even though it ended in the most frustrating way imaginable.
Yeah.
I mean, that the grins on Sagan and Marchman's face after that one too were just great, because it was great forechecking by the Stars' third line, or Stars' second line, you know, their best line. Great forechecking, turn it over to Shane Feeds. I guess Marchment, and Marchment tries the between the legs, back between the legs shot, and totally fans on it. You know, something the guys would have been giving him the hardest time in the world about, but it drops perfectly for Sagan, who's been kind of cursed the last few games and hitting posts and crossbars and all this stuff. So it ends up being this wonderful, like, kind of gift for Sagan. And you could see after the game, both of them were just grinning from ear to ear after the goal, because they were both like, yeah, that's not at all what either of us planned. But boy, it's nice when things work out. So it would have been nice if the game had ended as well as it began, but it was still a really nice moment.
Yeah. Well, I think that Mason Marchman is watching Cameron Hughes' highlights.
Yes.
I think that, and for those that didn't see it, what an ending of the Texas Stars the other night. Overtime with just a nifty goal. And just the coolest thing was not only the goal, but how loud that crowd was. And it just reminds you that Cedar Park is a terrific destination to go watch. Like, you know, what an awesome time if you're a Stars fan just to travel a couple hours and go see the Stars top prospect in Liam Bischel. You know, to see some of these players perform. And AHL hockey is, I say, almost as good as NHL hockey. What it's lacking is consistency, as far as the players being consistent on a night in and night out basis. But most of your AHL players can go to the NHL level and play a game or two and be fine and just fit right in. And that's why you see them fit in. You know, I mean, look how good Cole Lind was in the preseason. So, all right, a couple more. We're running out of time. We always take Robert long, but that's because he is awesome. Brian Tatum says, I understand that DeBoer will never get rid of Steve Spott. Somebody else needs to take over the power play ASAP. I think DeBoer is probably going to take that over or be heavily involved. Pay for another assistant coach just for special teams. We don't have to lose Spott, but we need to do something. Well, folks, Jim Montgomery is not available. In fact,
yeah. And frankly, Jim Montgomery is kind of the last coach I would want at this point where he'd be tempted, right? What we've seen in his history is he tends to, you know, shine a harsh spotlight on players when things aren't quite as good as they should be.
I was just happy because I believe Steve Ott will stay with the team.
I didn't see that. That's good. Good.
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I know there's a relationship there from their time, the first time around in St. Louis. Otter is very popular in the locker room. You know, in talking, did the preview with our former Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Oh my God, that's so bad that I can't remember his name. Covered the Stars for the Dallas Morning. Robert DeFranks.
Oh, Matt DeFranks.
Matt DeFranks. Yeah. Had a great conversation with him, and he was talking about Ott. And one of the things is Doug Armstrong doesn't really allow the assistant coaches to talk much, so. So he could get really Steve Ott's feelings if he wanted to be a head coach, but he said that, you know, he was very popular within the organization. So.
Well, and there are some guys too where, you know, they're just their best in that role. Every now and then you've got a diamond in the rough who, you know, has been an assistant coach for a long, long time, and they finally get their chance and they do great. But there's nothing wrong with being a really successful assistant coach in the NHL. Absolutely. That's a good career. That's a good life. Plus, you kind of get to be the good guy all the time. The head coach has to be the bad guy sometimes with players, whereas the assistant coaches, right, they get to come in after the tirade and kind of say, okay, well, here's what we're going to work on, or here's what you're doing well. Yeah, I know, man. But here's where we think you can really improve, right? They get to be the kind of adjunct and come in and kind of help out on the side, or the TA. As opposed to the one actually doling out all the really harsh grades. So that's not, if that's all Steve Ott ever is an assistant coach in the NHL after being an NHL player for a decade plus, that's a pretty great life. So good for
him. Yeah, you're absolutely right. James D, how much leeway do special teams get after DeBoer's comments tonight, my friend? I don't think they do. A weird one from BC Trading Cards TX to end. Just the random one after all the special teams, Robert. Casey DeSmith is not very good. He has been ineffective, and Pete DeBoer is overworking Otter early already. That is going to backfire the longer it happens. I think they will already deeply regret losing Wedgwood. I would say that I think Casey DeSmith's been really good this year. I think, you know, his last start, he'd obviously want some, you know, that back. I don't think Otter has been overworked. In fact, there have been some games that I'm surprised Casey DeSmith's getting the start. In fact, there could be a possibility we could see him against Chicago on Wednesday.
Well, I mean, you know, I will give the tweeter credit. Casey DeSmith didn't make a single save tonight, so you do have to put that on him.
That's
true. From the bench, didn't make a single save.
That's why I said it's so random.
Yeah. I'll just cite numbers because I
love it.
Look, he signed for a few years, but here's the fact. When you look at the best metric I've found, if you want to just point to one number, again, I always think it's better to dig into multiple numbers and multiple performances. But the number I found is goals saved above expected, which takes into account, okay, this shot, this type of shot, right, a one-timer from this spot in the ice with movement or whatever, with the situation, you know, is it 5-on-5 or power play or whatever, goals saved above expected takes all that into account. So on, if you look at just what's the easy, cheap one, the money puck, has Casey DeSmith at 22nd in the entire NHL at goals saved above expected. That is better than Jonas Korpisalo. That's better than Joseph Woll in Toronto. That's better than John Gibson. That's better than Mackenzie Blackwood, who we saw in San Jose the other night. That's better than, you know, pick a lot of other goals. Askarov, the great prospect in San Jose. Aiden Hill, everyone knows in Vegas, who's played 14 games this year. That's better than Aiden Hill, who's been exactly average. Casey DeSmith has saved 3.6 goals more than an average NHL goalie would have saved at this point in the year. I don't see for making $1 million a year, how you could really expect much more than that from him. And if you want, I can cite where Scott Wedgwood is, but it's not in a very good spot in the list. It's a ways down there.
I mean, so. I was going to piggyback. He is 1-0 in Nashville. Five games played, a 3.69 goals against with a save percentage of .878. So,
and he's allowed 5.5 goals more than an average goalie would be expected to allow based on the shots he's faced, has Wedgwood. So he's like 64th in the NHL. He's right in the cusp of the 32nd best backup in the league.
Yeah. And we have to realize, like, Wedgwood wanted more money than the Stars wanted to pay, as far as, and he wanted multiple years at it. Now, when you're up against the cap like the Stars are, you know, $500,000 matters. So, you know, they decided, and it's a, I think, a really good deal. 3 years, $1 million for Casey DeSmith. All right. I'm going to end real quick on this, Robert.
One other thing really quickly about Casey DeSmith. There's two things.
Yeah.
Number one, yes, he's the backup, right? So if he plays 20, 30 games or whatever in the year, and you get even average from him, like let's say that average even comes down a little bit, then that's great. That's all you need. Average, the Stars should be scoring more than their opponents most night anyway. So that's already worth it. Number two, the real way to be getting an outstanding backup performance is it has to be a player in your system already 9 times out of 10. You're not usually going to find those guys unless you just get a random backup who happens to have a hot year. The Stars last had that probably with like Mike Smith way back in the day.
Yeah.
Unless you draft and develop a goalie like that, where he's kind of on the cusp and he's pushing your starter, you're going to have to go out and get a veteran like Wedgwood or like DeSmith or whoever it is. And DeSmith's been just as good as expected. So if you want to blame anyone, blame the Stars drafting for not finding an amazing goalie. Also, Ottinger's only like 25. So they're fine. Goal is not a problem for the Stars. Other things might be. Goal is not a problem. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's end on this, because a couple of Stars fans reached out to me today because Elliot Friedman tweeted out in their 6-2 loss in Edmonton after the game, the Rangers have made it very clear they are interested in making moves, shaking up their roster. Among the names indicated are Chris Kreider and Jacob Trouba, although other options will be considered. So Trouba was the name that a couple of Stars fans wanted. And my counter to that is the following. First, I always love Stars fans that throw out trade scenarios. As crazy as they might be or as sane as they might be, the fact is you're highly engaged as a hockey fan if you're throwing out trade scenarios. And I love you for that. And I really appreciate that you're reaching out to me. But one of the things that you need to do is look at the salary comparison. Trouba has $8 million left this year, $8 million left next year. Mm-hmm. So how could the Stars fit it within their cap this year specifically, but next year? So the counter could be, well, maybe New York retains salary. The problem is New York only has 2.5 under the cap as well. So they need some, you know, maneuverability around the trade deadline. So all in all, I don't think that works as far as a Jacob Trouba. And you're getting a 31-year-old. I wish we could get him when he was in Winnipeg. I'm not saying Trouba is on the downside, but what I am saying is that I don't think he's the same player. Yes, he's a hard hitter. I love his leadership ability. I really like Jacob Trouba as a person. But at the same time, I just don't think that the Stars have the defensive woes necessarily to pick up that contract. And by the way, who are you giving that New York wants back? Because they're going to want a Jason Robertson or someone like that, and that salary would match up as far as Jason Robertson makes about $7.5 million. So I just wanted to say that. Same with Kreider. I mean, these are difficult trades for the Stars to make at this point.
Yeah. If you really want to get crazy, if you're the Stars and you think, absolutely, 13-7 is just unacceptable, we got to blow things up, make a huge trade, then you would have to do something like trade, let's say, Robertson and Dumba for Kreider or something like that. Kreider's a left wing, so I guess you plug him in. You trust that the 33-year-old who signed for $6.5 million for 3 years still, you think that's a better bet than betting Robertson's going to rebound as as a younger player. I mean, it's just, I like Kreider. I think, you know, he's a good player, but he's a good player when you have a good supporting cast and you have Artemi Panarin around too. Getting Kreider in exchange for one of your other good young players, I just don't see how that's a net improvement, because you just have to expect he's going to continue to be that good. He also, by the way, last time I checked, he had like 9 goals this season, which is great. He's going to score a lot of goals. That's Kreider's game. And he had 0 assists through like 19 games. So he might come in and score, but he sure isn't going to help anyone else score. So I don't know that he's going to cure everyone else in this line, but maybe he scores a couple more than someone else. But yeah. And Trouba, you know, he'd be suspended for half the time he's here anyway. So who really
This is exactly why you need to support Robert Tiffin, starsthoughts.com, at Robert Tiffin. Let's get his Twitter followers up as well. What am I missing, sir? Any other thing that I need to plug for you?
I had a timely article in D Magazine last week about the Stars top line, about the best line, the Duchesne, Sagan, Marchment line. So it's about a week old now, but it's still very relevant given what we've seen. So go ahead and check that out too. Maybe I'll take Mike's job or something if enough people read that article. I don't know. I don't know how media works, but that seems likely. So let's try that.
That is absolutely awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so glad that you're part of the Spits and Suds family. You always bring it. You, David, Sean, Ralph Strangis has been involved. So Leah, I just love like the different opinions and stuff like that. So I appreciate it. We always go long with you, and I feel bad about that, but at the same time, that's because you're so darn good. So stick tap, sir.
Thanks, Gavin. I'll try to interrupt more often so we can finish sooner.
Well, it was a roller coaster ride, Stars fans, but hopefully you listen to this podcast and you say, oh, I didn't realize that. And hopefully you got something out of tonight, because, you know, it's one game. And like I said, it's a 6-flag roller coaster tonight. But if they win in Chicago on Wednesday night, 4 out of 6 points is never a bad thing. So for Robert Tiffin, I'm Gavin Spittle. We'll be back with another episode soon. Thank you so much for supporting us in November. This is Spits and Suds on 105.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everyone.